Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We'd like to call the meeting to order, please. Ms. Birdsall, would you please call the roll?
Of course. Board Member Flores?
Aye.
Board Member Goff?
Aye.
Here. Board Member Masnek?
Here.
Board Member Rankin?
Yes. Here.
Board Member Shuffle?
Here.
Board Member, Vice Chairman Schroeder?
Here.
And Chairman Durham?
He will be here shortly, we expect. Thank you. Would you please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance? Mr. DeStefano, board member from Park, please lead us.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Jean's grabbing some paper.
Thank you. Thank you, John. Is there a motion to approve the agenda? Jane?
So moved.
Second? A second, please?
Second.
Thank you. Do I need to get closer? Yes, thank you. All in favor? Yes?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Aye.
Next, please, the consent agenda. Joyce, would you please make a motion for us?
I move to place the following matters on the consent agenda. 1501, approved Jefferson County School District's waiver request to waive 22-30.5-107, 1 BCRS, 16.01, regarding disciplinary proceedings concerning a license, charge number 201, 4EC69. To signify acceptance and approval of the terms and conditions of the settlement agreement by directing the commissioner to sign the agreement. 1602, regarding disciplinary proceedings concerning a license, charge number 2015EC396, directing department staff and the state attorney general's office to prepare the documents necessary to request a formal hearing for the revocation of the credential holder's professional principal license pursuant to 24-4-104 CRS. 16.03, approved 9 initial emergency authorization requests as set forth in the published agenda. 16.04, approved 1 renewal emergency authorization request as set forth in the published agenda. 16.05, approved University of Colorado Denver Aspire request for authorization of teacher preparation program in the endorsement of early childhood education. 8.01. 1606, approve Relay Graduate School of Education's request for initial authorization.
Can we put a hold on that?
Not yet.
Wait a minute. Yes.
Okay. Authorization as an institute of higher education in the state of Colorado to offer post-baccalaureate teacher preparation programs in elementary education. 8.02. And the secondary education endorsements of English Language Arts. 8.09. Mathematics. 8.14, Science, 8.17, and Social Studies, 8.18. 1701, approve the 2016 state review panelists as set forth in the published agenda. This is the end of the consent agenda.
So that's a proper motion. Is there a second? Thank you.
Well, I
just need a second, and then we'll
second.
Then
okay,
we'll
second.
Do the... Okay. Pam, go ahead, and then...
I would like to take two items off the consent agenda.
Sure.
One is item 15.01, and the other one is item 17.01.
Okay.
Val?
16.01, 16.06, and 17.01. That's the approved, the Relay graduate.
That's 1606.
1606.
Okay.
And then 1701.
Okay, so that's already been pulled.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
1605, the Aspire request.
Any others? So I think the motion is...
Let me just make sure I've got this. We have Pam pulling 15.01, is that correct?
Yes.
And then you are also pulling
17.01. Val had 16.06.
And then Joyce is pulling
16.05.
16.05. So then I think it would just be a motion, or a motion
as amended.
To approve. Yeah, as amended with those items pulled.
Is that fine?
Yes.
Any objections as amended?
Okay.
So could you let staff know?
Yes.
Because they may have questions.
And all these right. items will fall back into the order of the agenda.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And actually, you're next.
Perfect. Well, good morning, Vice Chairman Schroeder, members of the board, and welcome Commissioner Crandall to your first Colorado State Board meeting. I'd like to just give my friendly reminder to please speak clearly into your microphones. I've already heard that people in the audience are unable to. It's a little hard to hear. So if you do turn your microphones off when you're not speaking, please remember to turn them back on. For anyone needing to connect with CDE's guest wireless, locate the CDE hotspot, and the password is Silver, capital S. In your board packets, you have the following materials. You have your events calendar and the quick glance expense report. You have a memo for item 8.01, you have a memo from Alyssa Dorman regarding the REDACT rules, a copy of the REDACT rules, both redline, track changes, and clean, a crosswalk between OLLS, feedback, and rule, and we will be providing you with the comments and response document that Alyssa has put together. We received one more comment this morning. And also, all of the comments are available on board docs. For item 13.01, you have a copy of the resolution in recognition of former interim commissioner, Dr. Elliot Asp. For item 13.02, and this is before you, was a copy of the resolution in support of the seal of biliteracy. For item 14.01, you have a copy of the school bullying prevention and education grant program PowerPoint. A copy of the draft rules for the administration of the school bullying prevention and education grant program, the crosswalk of the statute and draft rule. You have two example survey questions and a 10-year trend data of the Colorado State suspension and expulsion incidents. For item 14.02, you have a copy of the kindergarten school readiness PowerPoint, the summary of the school readiness initiative within CAP4K, the school readiness components within CAP4K. And then we also have provided you with comments that we've received pertaining to school readiness. For item 15.01, you have materials pertaining to Jefferson County's waiver request. For item 15.02, you have materials pertaining to Widefield School District innovation application request. For item 16.07, you have a copy of the educator preparation and licensure rules exceptions document that's sitting on the board bench before you. I just would like to let you know the redline and clean version of the rules are available on board docs, but due to the size, we did not print fresh copies. For item 17.01, you have a memo from Lisa Medler regarding the state review panel selection process and the overview of the state review panel applicants and the process and the proposed panelist list for 15-16. For item 18.01, you have a copy of the concurrent enrollment PowerPoint, which we have sitting before you. We received a final version the other day. And then the district at a glance document. For Thursday, February 11th, for item 3.01, you have a copy of the following bills. You have House Bill 16-1131, House Bill 1121, Senate Bill 45, and Senate Bill 72 sitting on the board bench before you. And for item 4.01, you, as this pertains to the University of Virginia's data sharing agreement, you have a copy of the parent opt-out letter and form, the parent consent form, and two preliminary reports for UVA's core knowledge study. For item 5.01, you have a copy of the educator effectiveness rules, the educator effectiveness matrix performance evaluations report, and an accompanying PowerPoint. For item 6.01, you have the school and district performance framework state exceptions PowerPoint. And for item 8.01, you have the school and district accountability clock PowerPoint, which has been set before you on the board bench this morning. And that concludes my report.
Thank you. Could you please get the list of speakers? The next item is public participation. And if you've signed up for public participation, but it's your wish to speak to the Reed Act hearing. Please note that we will be having that hearing immediately following public participation, or 10:30, whichever comes sooner.
Thank you, Dr. Schroeder. My apologies for being tardy. We'll start public comment with Kat Rogers. Ms. Rogers.
Hello, my name is Kat Rogers. I am an educator and a design team member with Cooperative Community Schools, a proposed K-8 charter school awaiting approval with DPS. I wanted to share why I've decided to dedicate my time and energy towards such a school. Sustainability is one of the most important and appealing aspects of CCS. Students and educators will be learning in a creative environment that encourages environmental awareness, problem solving, participation in green initiatives, and skill sets to become inspired and necessary leaders. However, one of the unfortunate pitfalls of one of the unfortunate pitfalls of ambitious leaders is that they don't stick around forever. Too often, we as a people collectively sit back and wait for someone with answers, drive, and vision to move all of us forward towards meaningful solutions to a host of problems. At CCS, the critical component of sustainability is that our students and educators will flourish in an environment where there is no waiting, where the loss of one leader does not mean that the entire enterprise is lost, and that any individual can steer the ship should they wish to. How can underserved and neglected students come to feel so empowered? When a student looks at their educators, the staff at their school, and doesn't see a single person that looks like them, how can they possibly envision themselves to be capable leaders? Representation is important and transformative. However, diversity alone does not necessarily foster inclusivity. CCS places strong emphasis on the acceptance of a variety of backgrounds by integrating them into the mainstream culture of the school, rather than promoting the assimilation to one overarching, potentially marginalizing school culture. This gives students the unique opportunity to become culturally responsive and aware in a diverse environment, while simultaneously ensuring that each student is represented and included in that school culture. Diversity is not divisive, but the key to innovation and positive change. I stand proudly behind the school that is actively and sustainably seeking to pursue these shifts in the institution of education, and know that your support will lead to bright futures for our students and teachers. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Rogers.
Excuse me, Chair.
Yes.
Would you repeat the name of that school?
Cooperative Community School.
Thank you.
Tony Sapper? Sanchez, I'm sorry. Mr. Sanchez, don't mind me, I can't read.
Hello, good morning. I'm Tony Sanchez. Some of you may know me because I ran for state senate in Jefferson County. I'm now executive director of Freedom for Education. It's a statewide group that is asking for more transparency in the education system, protecting families' privacy, cutting down on a lot of the national mandated testing. I wanted to just briefly just speak about what you're going to talk today about, the kindergarten school readiness reporting system. Have some concern with particularly the part about the behavioral, social, emotional skills measuring this. Concerned about the lack of transparency. Concerned about the impact this will have on some of the children and their futures. Concerned about the fact that some of the parents already are not able to access some of this information already with the curriculum, already with the data when they have questions. I'm concerned about the purpose of this as we expand it or continue it. I've also concerned about whether or not this data is shared. And if it's not shared, then why do we need to do it? I would also think that we're already providing a lot of information, more than enough. And my biggest concern, though, is who has ultimate say? Do parents and guardians, or does the government? And I haven't had many people come up to me with these concerns. I've had at different events, I've had parents with their children, and some of them say they can't afford to either get them out or homeschool or go to private schools, and so why are they subjected to these special things or these kinds of things? And ultimately, I would like to just put this out there, that this issue is not a partisan issue. This is an issue that is basically, I have found already, that many people in our community in Colorado, throughout Colorado, are very concerned about. And so whatever we do, we should limit this as much as possible, if we do it at all. Because this has an impact on people wondering if they should say something, how they should approach it. And ultimately, there's a lot of micromanagement going on, too. And so you have teachers not wanting to do this or saying, if I do, should I do? And so when you're thinking about more and more of this data collecting, more and more of this Common Core, I'm just going to put that out there, that this is becoming a bigger and bigger issue for families across the board. And so thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Sanchez. Lynn Roberts.
Good morning, members of the board, and Commissioner Crandall. Good morning. I don't have prepared comments, but I would like to share with you a document string that I've redacted, as well as a narrative that's been happening at my children's school. My children attend a public Montessori school in Denver Public Schools. They are 9 and 7, and we received our park scores last month, and there was concern about where our scores came in. So one of the things that I did, and I've shared it with our own district board, is create a chart that shows the linear relationship between free and reduced lunch, which, as you know, is our measure of poverty in Denver Public Schools, and last year's CMAS Park scores. And I kid you not, this is what it looks like. And I'm sure you believe me, because I'm sure you have seen this information too. So immediately our governing board, our CSC, acted to, I don't think it was CSC, it was actually the staff leadership team, acted to implement an additional third grade technology class at our school. And it was very apparent from the meeting that I attended that this was specifically to train children on park CMAS test-taking skills. So we alerted our school that we wanted to opt out of both the PARC tests, which they knew we'd been talking about for months, as well as the test prep class. We were denied that request, the reason being that we were told parents aren't allowed to opt out of curriculum other than sex ed, family life ed. We haven't been provided with proof of that, but we were given the chance. We were offered the agreement not to have our daughter be given any test prep. That agreement was violated, then retracted, and our concern is that we fought very hard at our school to create a model where children are in their multi-age groupings, which is part of the Montessori model. At this point, because there's panic about test scores, my daughter and her peers are pulled out of that authentic Montessori environment that we fought for, and being given park-specific test-taking skills that we're being told we must do, even if we're not taking the test. And so I present you with the question of, can we make this more practical for families and allow them to also opt out of test prep now that there is the legal right to opt out of the PARC test? I just want to... Oh, can I share with you a brief quote? Okay. This is from David Berliner. He's one of the leaders of the National Education Policy Association, working with Kevin Wellner, and I'm sure you've heard his name. But he writes about us at our school. The inevitable responses to high-stakes testing, wherein students' test scores are highly consequential for teachers and administrators, include cheating, excessive test preparation, changes in test scoring, and other forms of gaming. He goes on to say, but perhaps the most pernicious response to high-stakes testing is the most rational, namely curriculum narrowing. In this way, more of what is believed to be on the test is taught. It reduces many students' chances of being thought talented in school and results in a restriction in the creative and enjoyable activities engaged in by teachers and students. And I'm sure there's more to be investigated there. But thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you. Rachel Cohen.
Good morning. We're a little grumpy, so I'll try to make this work.
Do you need me to hold him again?
You know, I don't know if he'll do it. If he will, I'm happy to have someone hold. Any of you are welcome to him.
He had a big smile. He looks
like a little really practice. So he's our designated holder.
We'll see how he does.
Yes. Go ahead, please. I'm sorry.
Good morning. I am going to speak sort of off the cuff, and it follows probably well after the last two people. We're at a time in history where 20 years from now, what happens in this room, what happens in our legislature, is going to be, are you on the right side or the wrong side of history? Both with regards to how we deal with education and the patchwork of rules, legislation, mandates, revisions, and also in terms of what it looks like for our children and the success that they can have, not just because they've been given opportunities in their schools, but because they've been valued in their communities, and their communities are similarly valued by the people who are making these decisions now. We are currently taking a lot of data, and for some families, that's good. Some families, if they were part of a medical practice and the medical practice said, I want to use all of your information for research because I think it's going to be great for the system, they would say, sure. But some families might not be comfortable with that for a variety of reasons, because you can't answer what's going to happen in 20 years with that data. Because disaggregating data doesn't necessarily mean that it's not identifiable, or aggregating data does not make it non-identifiable. We know this from various studies from MIT. We know this from various studies in the last few years. We know this because we see that quantum cryptography is becoming available to more people than we thought would be, ever, quickly, because that's how technology is running today. And my problem today isn't so much that we want to do the best for our kids by making sure there's accountability. My problem is that accountability is not being questioned in terms of the actual foundation of what we want to do, where we're going, and the kinds of permissions that we're giving our families to make decisions for themselves. As Lynn discussed, she doesn't have the same decisions that she should have with regards to some serious issues. I don't. It took me 6 months to get a waiver on TS Gold, and it doesn't even align to the particular curriculum and foundation of the school that my children are in, which is an accepted curriculum with 100 years of research behind it. That there is not a national test that supports that right now means that it's not going to be able to be given the same rights and adequacies as another school that's adopting as a result of trickle-down accountability standards from federal government to the state, to you, to the districts, TS Gold. And TS Gold has its value, but it's not necessarily end-all, be-all, and there are some problems, and the data is part of it, and how that data is dealt with is part of it. And I very much worry about what we're doing here. So what I'm going to do now is ask you to please try to put the brakes on. I know that it's coming. I know badging is coming. I know standards of letting government entities and corporations eventually have access to sort and figure out who's best for their groupings is coming. I know it's coming. But I don't want to be among the parents that say, I only can homeschool because I don't have choices. We need to create a situation where people that want choices carve out those choices for their families with permission from everyone involved, so that, and that there's transparency so they can decide if it's for them or not.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Kathy Richard. Which is included in the agenda in the future during this section. Child care is included.
Hello. Before my 3 minutes start, can I ask a procedural question? Based on this public comment, and are comments recorded as they are stated and not summarized?
That's correct.
Okay. And then what responsibility does the board have to respond to those comments? Are you required to respond to the comments?
I don't believe that we are, no.
Okay. So I'm going to give you some comments, and I'm going to ask you to take an action to respond to them. And, of course, that will be up to your discretion. So my comments are related to the discussion of collecting data on, from kindergarten to third grade, similar to what other people are talking about. So my first question is, what is the driver or issue for this program? How is this program going to solve the specific problem that's been identified? These following questions need to be considered and answered. Please provide in excruciating detail every single piece of data being collected, not just a sample. Who will be collecting this data? Who will pay for the collection of this data? Where and when is this data being collected? Where is the data being stored? How is the data being protected? Who is paying for the protection of this data? Who has access to this data and why? What qualifications do the people who look or analyze this data have? Who is paying for this expertise? How are parents informed and involved? Is CDE willing to and able to absorb liability costs that will arise from lawsuits if the data is hacked? What actions will be taken as a result of these analyses? Who will pay for this? How will changes be implemented? What research justification evidence has been provided for implementation of this program? Some personal observations. I live in a school district, and I didn't tell you that. I am in the Jeffco School District. I am a parent of a 14 and 16-year-old. I live in a school district that was unable to enforce its own policy regarding obtaining parental permission before releasing students from school. In my own research into a particular curriculum in Jeffco, I have found that it neither meets the CDE standards nor Colorado state law. There seems to be no mechanism or procedure that exists at the state level to ensure that districts are following state law and state board policy. I actually have a message into Mr. Durham from a week ago to address this specific topic. Finally, I object to the data being collected based on town hall meetings and other school districts across the nation, and based on the inappropriateness of the data being collected with the implementation of the core curriculum. In light of my earlier comments, I question this board's ability to implement, execute, and oversee a project of this magnitude and ensure its proper implementation at the school level. I request that the board take an action to provide answers to my questions and provide them to every single parent and citizen in the state of Colorado. As my parents say, the devil is in the details. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Richard. Tony
Tyson?
Yes, Ms. Tyson.
Good morning, board members, Chair Durham, and Commissioner Randall. Well, Randall, excuse me. Excuse me, I can't see the C in front of that. My name is Tony Tyson, and I'm the World Language Coordinator and our new dual language immersion TOSA in the Thompson School District. I'm here to speak to the seal of biliteracy and the seal of biliteracy as a game changer. Last time we were here, we talked about the 16 states that have already adopted this. Since we've been here, two more have done that, New Jersey and Utah, and Iowa just proposed it yesterday. So if you take a look at the seal of biliteracy, I want you to think a little bit about this, because last time some of your concerns were, well, we don't really want to approve this set of standards. What does it mean for elementary students, et cetera? Let me just assure you that in the Colorado academic standards with English and with world languages, those are already there. This is just a little perk, something else that says, congratulations to you. You have two languages. And what that has done for California, you would not believe. When employers see that, oh, you know, instead of saying, I've got a 4 or 5 on the AP test, I have two languages. How wonderful is that? And it really says, speaks to the need that we have. And we talk a little bit about the evidence that it has with cognitive benefits. We just started our elementary TOSA program. Our kindergartners are taking math only in Spanish, and their scores are off the charts compared to their monolingual peers. Because operating in two languages really gives a lot of cognitive benefits. It also gives some benefits of saying, here in this country, we value that people speak English and they speak another world language, either that it's their heritage language, their native languages. And really, this is not something that says, you have to do this. This is a choice. And districts can take what the requirements are, which we all have in our standards, and say, this is, we want to adopt it like this, or we want to add some other things to it, as you see some of our colleagues in DPS, Adams 14 and Eagle have already done. They're leading the way. They're helping us out. Thompson District, our Board of Education and our administrators keep asking me, what's happening, because they're so excited about all of this, that there could be the possibilities. So I really want to say to this, let's take a look at this and say, yes, let's give this seal of biliteracy, this resolution that says go for it, because we do that with STEM. We do that with math. We do that with music. We do that with a lot of things. Why not languages? And you're going to say to me, well, you already have this in the standards. Well, let's take the World Language Standards, because I chaired the writing of the World Language Standards, okay? And it was fun. Can I say one more thing?
Sure.
I was just getting warmed up here. Yeah. But it talks about being at this level, but only 17% of our students get to that highest level, because we don't simply think that it's important to go there. So with this, it would encourage them, and we would have bilingual students ready to be part of Colorado and help out our economy and our society. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. That concludes the public comment period. We'll now proceed to item 8.0, which is the rules for the administration of the READ Act. And let's see here. Okay. Colorado Board of Education will now conduct a public rulemaking hearing for the rules for the administration of the Reading to Ensure Academic Development, READ Act 1 CCR 3.01-92. The State Board voted to re-notice the notice of rulemaking at its December 9th, 2015 board meeting. A hearing to promulgate these rules was made known through publication of a public notice on January 10th, 2016 through the Colorado Register and by State Board notice on February 3rd, 2016. State Board is authorized to promulgate these rules pursuant to 22.2.107(1)(c) Colorado Revised Statutes. Commissioner, is your staff prepared to provide an overview?
They absolutely are.
Perfect.
And thank you so much, board members. We have the fantastic staff that have been working hard on this. There's Elisa Dorman and Melissa Colesman. I'm trying to learn all 613 names, and I've got 20 of them down the last 3 weeks, so I have to be here a long time to get through that. But thank you so much for all of your work on this. I've been able to observe quite a bit of it the last few weeks that I've been here, sat in on a very long training session where they discussed this. And so with that, they're ready to go.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Briefly, before we move to public comment, I will just remind you what you have in front of you as part of your board packet. Today you have a copy of the red line version or the track changes version of the rules, as were presented to you as an information item last month. You also have a version of the changes accepted, or the clean version if you were to vote adoption. You additionally have a copy of the crosswalk of changes. I just want to remind you that this rule revision process was prompted by the passage of House Bill 1323 in the last legislative session and a subsequent review by the Office of Legislative Legal Services. So the changes that you see here presented to you are largely directed by those two actions. Additionally, at the December board meeting, Chairman Duren directed us to visit with staff who had concerns about an additional section within the rules. That section I'll draw your attention to is section 3.04. At the request of the board, some additional changes were made to that section. And if you have any questions, we'll be pleased to answer. Following public comment, or now, Chairman, we can pass to you copies of the written comments that were received as of this morning, all the ones for today. We began receiving written comment last Wednesday, and staff has prepared a document for you that summarizes the written comments as well as staff responses to those written comments. So I'm pleased to provide those now or after the public comment phase of this hearing.
Okay, why don't we provide those after we've had public comment. There are those signed up to testify. So we'll start with Superintendent Susan Cordova. Ms. Cordova.
Thank you for this opportunity to speak about the proposed READ Act rule changes. We appreciate and share the State Board's commitment to advancing early literacy across the state, particularly for English learners as they gain proficiency in literacy while they're learning English. DPS has invested deeply in improving literacy for our early learners, and over 40% of our students are learning English as a second language. With the support of the READ Act, we are proud to say that Denver ELLs have consistently been reading at higher levels than ELLs outside of Denver for the past 4 years. In that spirit of shared commitment to improving early literacy, I'm here to express our deep concern over the proposed change to Rule 3.04 of the READ Act, which we believe conflicts with the spirit of the Act and will have a damaging impact on our English learners. This proposed change would require that we double test students who are learning to read in Spanish as they are simultaneously learning English. Our goal is to have all students reading proficiently in by third grade, as well as demonstrating proficiency in English language. We offer transitional native language instruction as well as supported English language instruction, and we know that all models can be effective in helping students acquire English proficiency. Over half of our students choose transitional native language instruction, their families do, meaning that their children receive instruction in Spanish literacy while they're learning English. The model must be implemented with fidelity, given that many of our English learners enter school with less readiness than their higher income native English speaking peers. English learners have double the work, so to speak, and yet are also subjected to the most assessments. In addition to CMAS, English learners also participate in access testing as well as the READ Act assessment. This new READ Act rule change would require assessment in the language of instruction, frequently Spanish, to determine if a child has a significant reading deficiency, as well as a READ Act assessment in English, along with the CMAS tests in literacy, mathematics, and the access assessment given in four parts over multiple days. Parents and teachers may rightly question when we are teaching these most fragile students so that they can demonstrate their learning on this multitude of assessments. We strongly believe in the power of assessments, but this additional requirement will take valuable instructional time away with very little return in instructional value that we don't already have from other resources. Furthermore, we risk having students over-identified as significantly below grade level when in fact they are making progress in reading while they are learning English. We urge you to preserve our local autonomy so that we can continue our focus on early literacy without mandating additional assessments, which we believe will impede our progress with our English learners. We also fully support the previous version of the proposed rule change that would allow parents of students who are being instructed and assessed in Spanish to request an additional assessment in English. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cordova. Cara, I apologize, Vaisa? They get close? Probably not. At least somebody's coming up to the podium. So.
Yeah, I know it's me. You can't say my name right. It's okay. My name is Cara Viesca. I'm a professor at CU Denver, and I lead a group in Colorado that's called HELDI. It stands for Higher Educators in Linguistically Diverse Education, and as an organization, we're here to stand against the passing of the new rules where we would add an assessment burden to our bilingual learners. We stand in agreement with Susana Cordova's recent, you know, what she just said. And also, while I'm here to talk about the READ Act, I also want to emphasize that we are in support of the Seal of Biliteracy and have already seen some really positive things happen in the state. In fact, in DPS, over 600 students have already applied for the seal this year. It's something that we really need to move forward with. So with the READ Act, our concern lies in a couple of things. First of all, that it is an unnecessary assessment burden. When we assess students in a language of that they are still learning, that data that we collect is actually invalid and unreliable. And we recently had an assessment law passed in Colorado that suggested we shouldn't be utilizing unreliable and invalid data in our work here in Colorado. And I would urge you to allow for the local control decisions to be made around who should be given assessments and which languages, because otherwise we're likely collecting invalid, unreliable, and quite frankly useless data. We are also concerned about some of the statements we've heard from the board where there appears to be a lack of acknowledgement that there are other laws, there are other accountability measures in place that are ensuring students are learning English and becoming fully proficient users of English. And in fact, we know from the data from DPS that students in their bilingual programs over time outperform students in many other programs because they're so strong and so well implemented. So we ask you to please pay attention to the practitioners in the state, to the researchers in the state, to the teacher educators in the state. We represent decades and decades of expertise and service and work, and we do not need this new rule to be passed to require more assessment for bilingual learners. We're concerned that it also represents a civil rights violation in that it targets only a particular subgroup of students that other students would not be subjected to the same additional testing burden. And so we urge you to please not pass that provision. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's see, Mr. Garcia.
Good morning, Jorge Garcia, Bueno Policy Center, and the Colorado Association for Bilingual Education. Do not change Rule 3.04. The initial rules for the implementation of the READ Act were problematic, and they were resisted by teachers, administrators, community, researchers, and others. The Attorney General provided guidance for us, and the current rules were then adopted. Legislative Legal Services found no problems or issues with the current rule. The Attorney General has not indicated a problem. Teachers haven't come to you with problems. Administrators haven't come to you with problems. Students have had no issues with not being double tested. If it's not broken, don't fix it. These other rules that are being considered were broken. Fix those. This rule is not. The proposed change is problematic. While not required for the determination of significant reading deficiency, the rule requires an English assessment, it says, to inform READ plan development. Please look at Section 227-1206, which sets minimum requirements for the plan development. And it does leave out languages of assessment. So therefore, anything beyond this minimum is left to the local education providers, not to this board. They have the authority to make their decisions and to set their own district assessment strategy. The Attorney General states that the READ Act and the Constitution give authority to local school districts to determine which assessment strategy best fits. This rule, the proposed rule, replaces local assessment strategy with a state-mandated assessment strategy. Here's where I disagree with Tony Dill. The formal Attorney General opinion at page 5 is clear on its face. This would replace local decision with a state decision. This is an unfunded state mandate. Another test only for Spanish speakers, more and bigger government replacing local decisions with state decisions and without, in our opinion, the authority to do so. Implementation of this rule can be accomplished in only one of two ways, and both of those ways are detrimental to Spanish speakers and only to Spanish-speaking Latino students. First, replacing one data point with the English test is one way to implement it. So you take away a Spanish test and give the English test, in which case that data point is gone and the opportunity to receive additional services or to be redesignated without a deficiency is lost for those students. That's one way to do it. The second way to do it is to do double testing. When you do double testing, you're removing the opportunity for those students to be receiving instruction that could take them out of that reading deficient category. One more sentence. targeting Spanish-speaking Latino students with rules that would negatively, disproportionately impact them, would deny them rights under the Equal Education Opportunities Act, the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and the Equal Protection Clause of the U.S. Constitution, and would be against the sensibilities of a majority of Colorado residents. Thank you.
Thank you. Nicole Chappell. You didn't sign up. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you. All right. Ms. Dorman, do you wish to now make some comments about the effect of the rules and what you think the practical effect will be and
sure.
any changes or suggestions you may have?
Yes, Mr. Chair. We have two sets of documents to share with you. One set is a summary document that highlights the comments that we received through the written comment phase. We received three through the close of business yesterday, and one this morning that I've simply attached the letter to but was not able to add to the document. Additionally, last week through some internal discussions within the staff here at the department, we have for your consideration presented to you on this particular page, and when Busy gets back, she can put it on the screen, is some possible new language for consideration to Section 3.04. But we would be happy to entertain any questions that you may have about these rule changes or about the comments that have been received.
Questions from members of the board. Dr. Scheffel, did you wish to start?
Thank you. Really appreciate all the comments. Can you just tell me if this is an accurate sort of summary? It strikes me that this is our only state initiative in literacy that's K-3. It's designed to help close achievement gaps for students so that we can have a larger percentage of kids on grade level by the end of third grade, which we know is highly predictive for the rest of their school career and life, right? So that's what this is intended to do. The money is tied to the students. It seems that these rules are designed to help parents and teachers and kids know if they're progressing toward being able to be proficient in reading by the end of third grade in English and Spanish. And that's why the two tests make sense. And the parents I talk to want their kids to be proficient in English when they read. And if we don't have the ability to find out whether the money works, we probably shouldn't have the state initiative, which is our only, and it's a fair amount of money that the public has allocated to this initiative. So the question is, based on the Attorney General's comment or decision, is that possible for us to do to give that data to people that are in charge of instruction for these students so that we can see if they're making progress and hopefully provide greater resources if they're not? Is that an accurate summary of what we're trying to decide here? And some feel that's double testing. Others would say, I want my child to be proficient in English, and if we can't test them in English in reading, not just the access test, which is more focused on oral language, in reading, then we don't know if the money works for the public and for the students themselves and for the parents.
I would say that the rule change that is being proposed would accommodate, as you just described, the ability to know in a particular program model if students were progressing across the years, kindergarten through third grade, to meet the goal or the outcome for the program model, which would be literacy or biliteracy in both English and Spanish. I would let our legal counsel, Tony Dill, respond to his thinking around whether or not this meets that criteria. It is my understanding that it does. That it's allowed language.
Thank you.
Mr. Dill?
I believe it is allowed language. The Attorney General's formal opinion dealt with which test to use to determine significant reading deficiency. The problem with mandating that all students take the English language test to determine significant reading deficiency is that it would result in over-identification of certain students who might be proficient in reading in their native language. What the new rules do is to let the school districts decide whether to give the test to determine significant reading deficiency in either English or Spanish, determining on what is appropriate for the particular language acquisition program that they use. However, to require the additional test in English to inform the reading plan. State Board of Education, of course, has constitutional authority of general supervision of the public schools, and more specifically, has been given statutory authority to promulgate rules as necessary to implement the provisions of this Part 12, Part 12 being the entire READ Act. It seems to me that at least, you know, a clear reading of that language would be that it would be within this board's authority to promulgate rules that would inform some of the content of the READ Act plan.
Thank you.
I would just like to add that,
Dr. Flores,
and I'm reading from an article that was written by Susan Hopewell and Kathy Escamilla. It was in the Journal of Literacy Research, and it substantiates what we're talking about here in that, and I'm quoting, reading and writing progress is measured annually in Spanish and English. Because of this, we are in a unique position to be able to examine and address questions of biliteracy development. Since, so in essence, if you're going to make sure that kids are gaining not only in fluency, in speaking the language, the second language, and also reading, you have to test in both languages. And it may be that indeed the second language lags behind. You may score a 10 in the test, but score a 3 in English. But that keeps gaining until by third grade you should be at grade level. And I think, too, that when we think that it's noted a lot that fluency should really be first, that you should gain fluency and not start actually teaching reading until you gain fluency. If you do that, that's going to take many years. I know in my case, I wouldn't say I was very, very fluent in learning, in speaking Spanish, but I could sure, you know, score in the eighth grade, in fourth grade, in reading, and scored in the 98th percentile. I'm giving me as an example, but I know lots of other kids. You can read and be learning the language. Fluency is actually very hard. I think fluency is much harder than reading. So I don't think we should base everything on when you speak, when you're able to be very fluent or fluent like native and start teaching reading in the second language. So that should be going along, and we should test if indeed kids are gaining in literacy during the time that they're in school from K through 12.
Ms. Dorman, did you have a comment?
I can wait. I didn't know if others would have comments. And then I did want to draw your attention to some of the things that
you
have in your packet.
There are enough circles going around that I'm having a little trouble figuring out which of these things you're talking about and exactly what the difference is.
Thank you. That's where I was going.
That would be great, because I actually don't know which one you're talking about and why.
Okay.
What I'm hearing, but let me just correct me now if I'm wrong. What I'm hearing is that the districts who object to the wording as it is now are saying that we are using, in order to determine whether a student has a significant reading disability, we are using two tests in two languages. What I'm hearing over here, I think, is that it's okay to test in the native language, but I also want to know how they're coming along in English. Those are two different conversations. Those are two different things.
How they're coming along in literacy.
I'm sorry, in literacy. Thank you. So those are two different things, because the section of diagnosis it sounds to me like folks are saying that should be in Spanish. As the kids are moving along, we also want to see how they're doing in English. And that's not what 3.04 says to me.
Can I ask you to clarify?
Yeah.
We have to make sure we're distinguishing oral language and written language.
Right.
When you say literacy or Spanish
Thank
or
you.
English, we don't know what we're talking
Thank
about.
Thank you. Okay, so just talking about reading.
Yeah, so the testing should be in reading, in English, in Spanish.
Got it.
Because the oral language is actually an additional issue. But what we're saying is the READ Act is designed to teach students to read. So we need reading assessments in English and Spanish to find out if the programs work.
But in three, we're talking about diagnosis. Are we not?
Yeah.
And if you diagnose, if I don't speak a word of English and you ask me to read something in English, or let's try German, right? I'm actually very fluent in German, and I can't read German at all.
But they're interim
So you, I would have...
Sorry, they're interim
go ahead.
So we have to be really careful. I mean, I need to understand what you're talking about. It looks to me like you're saying we are going to diagnose a student with a deficient, a reading, significant reading deficiency in two different languages. And then do what?
Let's let Elise know.
Ms. Dorman.
Okay.
Thank you.
But I mean,
that's
not
you can
thank
help
you.
Us.
Not, okay.
Thank you. You've actually brought up what I was hoping that I would be able to sort of answer and clarify. So the Attorney General's opinion...
Yeah,
was written very specifically for a program model. So I want to just clarify one thing just for a moment. Students who are English learners who are not in bilingual or dual language programming test only in English. The Attorney General's opinion...
Would you repeat that?
Students who are English learners who are not in bilingual or dual language programming continue to test in English for a reading... significant reading deficiency according to the READ Act. When the opinion was handed down, the Attorney General said that any board-approved assessment would be allowed to be used for the definition or identification of a significant reading deficiency. Programs then and local districts could choose which one of your board-adopted assessments they would use for the designation of a significant reading deficiency. That designation has the launching of a couple of things. One, it launches the distribution of your per pupil intervention dollars to support kids where they show that they have a deficit. And it also launches a formal reading plan to support that child in the areas in which they are deficient. The proposed language of 3.04, as it has been being amended here, was really in response to the language you adopted in May, which already had highlighted English learners. And through the discussions with the board and the request to add in considerations for their development in a biliteracy program model to also check in on their literacy development in English, the board prompted this revision in 3.04. We have before you and here what we recognize may have singled out English learners in that program model separately from non-English learners in that program model. So if it's the board's desire to ensure within the program model that students will meet the goal of biliteracy, then the proposed language on the bottom here would address concerns that it had separated a particular type of student within that program model, and it would say within the program model, any student can be tested with any board-approved interim assessment, Spanish or English, determined locally. But additionally, the board's desire is to measure once annually their development in the second language of their instruction. So since the opinion is only about programs that teach both in English and in Spanish their literacy, it's only applied to those programs and those students. There are presently this year, per the October count, there are 12 districts that say that they operate this program model with students ranging from 16 all the way up to, you know, nearly 4,000. So for those 12 districts, they still have the choice to determine the assessment for the designation of a significant reading deficiency. But per the board's recommendation and your request of staff to offer language, you also asked for those students to be tested in another language of instruction, so either English or Spanish, which is the opposite of what their designation of a significant reading deficiency would be in. Does that clarify what the discussion is and what you were?
Would it be a reasonable summary to say, as a specific example, that for children that are in this dual track, that the district would choose which test to administer, and let's presume it's a Spanish test, and if they're found to be, or let's presume it's an English test, and they're found to be proficient in English, the district could then and would administer a test in Spanish to determine their progress in that language as well, and vice versa. Is that...
So your first set of language here would not allow for that?
I'm talking about the bottom half.
And the bottom half that you could consider, yes, it would allow that for any student in this particular program model.
Ms. Masnick?
And that seems to be in response to some of the concerns that have bubbled up here today.
Okay. Ms. Masnick?
So I'm not sure I am following this right. In order to test students in... ELL learners mm-hmm. for a significant reading deficiency, they can choose to test them in Spanish, in their native language.
Yes, you adopted that.
They can choose
that.
Either.
Correct. You adopted that last year.
And so this provision, though, doesn't change that. It just mm-hmm. asks that you also test them for English
or
reading
Spanish.
Proficiency.
Or Spanish in this case. Well, in your proposed rules, yes, in English as well for the English learner. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Yes,
I'm confused about the proposed language. I don't feel like it says what you just said. Am I wrong?
So
I mean, it seems to see, don't we still have the issue where students in a certain model receiving REDACT funds in Colorado, you may not still be able to find out if they're progressing in English in reading. Am I right? Based on that second set of language?
So the second set of language, which does not have to be considered here, is simply language that says for any student, an EL or a non-EL, who receives their literacy instruction in this program model, which is literacy instruction in both English and Spanish, the local provider still has the option to choose whichever interim assessment they would wish for the designation of a significant reading deficiency.
Right.
That is consistent with the opinion, it's consistent with statute, and it's consistent with the rules you adopted last spring. The second part of that says, in programs where literacy instruction is provided in both English and Spanish, students shall also be assessed with a state board approved assessment in the language of instruction not used for the significant reading deficiency determination. So if they chose to use the Spanish assessment for the determination of a significant reading deficiency once annually, according to the proposed rules, would allow you to know how they're progressing in the second language of instruction as a reader.
But it could be a whole other language.
Exactly, yeah. Except that the opinion did not opinion did not account for that. That's a consideration that you may wish to discuss, but the opinion is very narrow and specific
to
only
Spanish?
Assessments in English and Spanish and only program models that teach literacy in English and Spanish. So as an example, we've worked with immersion schools who may teach in different languages through guidance to help them determine. They'll test first in English, but how they might collect a body of evidence to show, just as you said, that they are reading in a language like German, which is not addressed here. Our guidance has always been and remains to be that if an English learner is tested in English first, that a body of evidence can be used to validate and or refute that designation of a significant reading deficiency. So that has always been our guidance to the field, and it remains our guidance to the field. It would be in considerations where Spanish assessment was used that you would potentially, as you asked, not have a gauge for development of literacy in the other language of instruction.
Let me ask a follow-up.
Yes,
so what does the data set look like at the end of the day? The public allocates the money follows the kids. We know at the end of third grade we want kids to be proficient in reading. We know that English is the target. We know that kids speak lots of languages and that the language of instruction needs to accommodate that. What does the data set look like so that legislators and the public might be able to say, this program makes a difference or this program doesn't make a difference?
Thank you for your question. The data set, as it is currently programmed, collects information on those students based on an English interim assessment score.
And so every child that receives REDACT money
presently
has what kind of data points?
They have significant reading deficiencies as determined by an English assessment. Up to this point, that's the only type of assessment that's been allowed in the collection. Because your rules changed late in the year last year, this collection cannot accommodate an assessment in Spanish yet. Future collections could accommodate an assessment in either English or Spanish.
So some kids will just have an interim assessment in Spanish, and some kids will just have an interim assessment score in English.
That would be correct.
Then what are we doing with these rules? I don't know that they really address the concerns of some, at least, that we don't know, that we still don't have data on a subset of students in Colorado in English. This doesn't help us with that. Is that correct?
It would not tell you if they have met...
they're becoming proficient in reading English.
It would not tell you if they had met grade level competency, which is the outcome for the READ Act in English.
English.
It would not tell you.
I'm confused that these rules help us tonight, at least address that concern.
So 3.04, the bottom of the second suggestion, is the one that Dr. Scheffel just described.
And that would not give you the data point, assuming that that was adopted?
It would
adopted?
Not give you the data point. Is that the question?
If we were to build into the collection both data points.
Okay. So we can put it in.
But if we do.
Would it give you, would it require at least the second test so that parents and teachers might know the outcome? It's just not being reported.
Correct.
So the value of the second proposal is... that while it doesn't change the aggregate data of literacy, it would at least provide an information to the interested parties of the success or failure of the second language.
And it would, yes, and it would allow for access to READ Act dollars that would not potentially be accessible if we use a singular language of assessment. So
potentially it could draw down some additional funds. But
potentially it could support students who were not yet revealed as deficient in their second language of instruction.
So there is, I think, some value in this, but it won't change the statistical result. Who was next? I'm sorry. Yes, Ms. Goff?
Thank you. It just seems that I mean, I'm seeing both sides of this, which I usually do. It's frustrating sometimes. It seems on the timing of if a parent, if a school district, if everybody involved decided, made the decision, yes, we want to have an English test as well to build up the database, give us some information. It seems important about what the timing of that would be. If there's, it needs to be after the student has had some chance to learn something.
So non-English proficient students are not required to be tested.
But maybe, but on the other hand, I can see where there does come a point where how long can that just go on? There needs to be literally an interim point where it's time to age appropriately, give an English test. Even though we have a lot of conversation these days around extending the number of years for English language learners in general. The legislature's talked about it going from a 3-year Colorado status to 5. Somebody's talking 7. Based on language learning research, it takes 7 years minimum to move, depending on the age you begin. That's the other thing. But I won't get off on that, but I just think I can agree with both. It is not the same type of assessing and trying to, what are we trying to learn from this if it's 2 languages? If I don't have the vocabulary, if I don't have the structure background, I'm not going to be able to read it no matter what. It's not going to work that way.
But that's what literacy is about.
Yes. and that's where the, I think we're all learning how to define some terms these days. But so I know that you can't just put an exam in front of a child about reading, if you know what you're trying to get out of it, without understanding and accepting that that may be a whole different scenario for someone who's going to be reading in a whole other language. It's literally two cultures in some ways. So I agree with both, but I do think I agree with having the semi-option of make sure they get assessed in a reading in English at some point in there. I just agree with that. I'm not sure I like it with a brand new kindergartner, first grader.
Ms. Masnick?
Well, I'm just wondering where we are on this, what our options are from my perspective, and I think from many of the board members' perspectives are that we are happy to have students who are bilingual, strong in their native language. I think we all agree that they're best served by learning English as well. We want them to know English as well. So is there any room in these rules for us to require that they are tested in English as well? Whether they're, I don't have a problem with being assessed for proficiency in reading in their native language, particularly when they're young. I think we still want to know where they're at on reading proficiency in English.
Your first set of proposed rules that are in red line at the top would be asking for exactly that. It was through the feedback that we received that we wanted to offer you consideration that in this program model there are students that are not English learners. And we just wanted you to have the option to consider, did you want 3.04 as it was proposed and written, which does do what you just asked, which allows for the local decision about which assessment to use for the designation of significant reading deficiency,
but still requires
a test annually in English for those English learners who took the Spanish test. The legal counsel has already said that is within your purview to do.
Okay, but is the data included? I mean, is that data reported?
So not presently,
because
but we would respond to whatever your directive was and make sure our collection was prepared to respond based on your decision.
Because certainly that's another aspect, is not only do we want to assess, we want to know how it's working.
Sure.
Whether it's working.
I understand.
So.
Dr. Sheffel.
Now, my sense is that the first set of language is much clearer if we take out English learners and replace it with students. I mean, the second set of language strikes me as very hard to follow. I think the first set of language is clear. But if we take out English learners, let's replace it with students, as in your second iteration.
Yeah,
that creates more generic language.
English and Spanish.
Okay.
I think that's great.
Yes, Dr. Schroeder?
But isn't the second part then talk about testing native English speakers who are in these programs to see if they are
They're already tested. We already have to test them in their native language.
I'm talking about native English speakers.
Yes.
Okay. The second part says that are in the bilingual programs that we find out if they are biliterate or not. So it is actually an expansion. I may be way off base, but I'm not a literacy teacher. I'm not any kind of a K-12 teacher. Is there a way for you just to come up with a classroom example of X number of kids, identify some kids that are identified based on which assessment and what happens during the year, so that we actually understand, those of us who are not steeped in this, what's the READ Act, what's the access piece, and what does it assess? And what are we learning in the two different options?
I didn't know if the commissioner had something to add first, or if he wanted to.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, Mr. Chair, actually, I had the exact same question, but I want to use a real-life example because I'm having a very difficult time following the different language, and specifically those who spoke, making sure that we're addressing their concerns at the same time. So my twins came last, boy, girl, put them into a bilingual program when they were first grade.
Mm-hmm.
Spanish in the morning, English in the afternoon. does this apply only to bilingual programs that parents opt their children into? Because you keep referring to ELL. This does not apply to ELL students who are not
in bilingual programs.
Who are not in bilingual programs.
They're in ESL programs.
Correct. So we're talking only about opt-in dual language immersion bilingual programs.
Correct.
Okay. So my kids then, Rhett and Savannah, would be assessed in English because they speak English. And then at some point, under 3.04 of the Part 2, they would be, the way I understand it, they would be assessed in their reading capability in Spanish also, and a score would be assigned.
Yes. That could happen according to 3.04 on the bottom, on 3.04 correct, at the top.
Okay, now let's assume that my kids only spoke Spanish. I wish they did. The school was too far away, and for second grade, my wife wasn't willing to drive the 14 miles round trip every time. But let's say they spoke Spanish. They would be assessed in Spanish that first semester, and at some point, and this is the top line or the bottom, they're going to be assessed in English, and a score will be assigned.
Yes, and I would say that because program models are different, it is not always the case that the English learner in that program model will be assessed in Spanish. We have examples, to answer your question, of all kinds of things. So we have examples of program models where it's a bilingual program.
Okay, Ms. Sharon, Lisa, just I don't want to go too far down the road because this then goes back to what Member Scheffel, I was trying to figure out how to say it appropriately. What she was saying is that we will, however, have an English data point for those students, not necessarily have a Spanish data point for them, because you said some will not necessarily be assessed in Spanish. It's not required by the READ Act. Isn't that what you just said, Elisa?
Annual assessment is I'm going to try to track. Annual assessment is required. Local districts choose which assessment form or version, Spanish or English, to use in a bilingual or dual language program model.
Okay. Then I guess the one clarifying point I need to understand is it the intent of the legislation that created the READ Act for us to have an English data point for every single student, whether they're in dual language, ELL, ESL?
But especially in a bilingual program. If you are in a bilingual program,
if you can answer real quick.
Was
it the READ Act that we have an English data point for every single student, regardless of what program they're in?
I'm going to, if it's okay, refer to Mr. Dill, because that is a legal interpretation of the READ Act, and I would feel more comfortable if he were able to respond to that question. I think his opinion may have responded to that.
Well, if I understand the question, I believe the answer is no. The READ Act actually seemed to take rather great pains in avoiding saying which language the determination has to be made in. And leaving that particular aspect of it up to the local districts.
And Mr. Chair, final comment then. That greatly changes my opinion of this whole conversation and provides, now I understand better, the individuals who are here to testify specifically on this bill.
Thank you. So,
yes, Dr. Scheffel. Schroeder.
It's okay. Going me.
I'll be confused most of the day.
I'd be grateful for some feedback from the folks who came and spoke, based on your recommendations here, to see what their comment would be.
Is that allowed?
We're not going to vote on this today because I don't think there'd be a unanimous vote.
We are up for a vote either way. You'll either vote adoption or you unanimously, or you won't vote adoption unanimously,
right,
and we'll come back in March.
Well, I can assure you it won't be unanimous because I understand what we voted on.
Let's. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think it's perfectly helpful if the superintendent would like to come back for a moment and perhaps could answer a few questions. And I know we're running a little late. We'll have to learn to live with it, unfortunately. Let me start. If I understood your comments correctly, you don't see a necessity to test some students in English if they're proficient in their native language, and you don't want to make that test. Is that, regardless of whether we're in A or B here, is that the substance of your comments?
So it is, and let me give some context around the rationale for the why. When we have looked at our data, so I want to make it clear, for all of our students, the overwhelming goal is for students to be proficient both in content, the content of reading, as well as in English. And the reason that we are so committed to the program model that we are talking about here, our bilingual program, is because when we look at our data, our students who are instructed in Spanish, families who choose this model, who are native Spanish speakers, who are instructed in Spanish and who are assessed in Spanish and have a full program until they reach the point that we use by access to determine that transition into English, perform not only better in Spanish, stands to reason, they've had instruction in Spanish, but they perform better in English than their peers who have not had that foundational program in Spanish. They perform higher in third grade when they take the third grade, what has been the lectura test, but they also perform higher in fourth grade on the reading test in English and in fifth grade on the reading test in English. And so the purpose for our desire to have strong program implementation of bilingual programming for families who choose that is we very strongly believe in the role of native language in maintaining culture and the opportunities that come out of that. But that actually is almost secondary to the overwhelming goal, which is for students to be proficient in English. And this is a very effective way for us to have that foundation and students to make that transfer into very strong English proficiency as well.
May I ask a follow-up?
Yes, Dr. Schaff.
Would you be clear when you say English reading or oral language? And then how
yeah,
do you...
Yeah, thank you. It's a great question. I am talking about English reading as demonstrated in the past with our TCAP scores. So students who are assessed, who are instructed and assessed in Spanish through third grade and then transitioned into English language assessments of reading perform at a higher level in English than their peers who did not have that foundation in Spanish. And so our goal is English proficiency in reading, in writing, in mathematics, and we believe that this strong foundation and bilingual program provides us that opportunity.
So that doesn't hold up to the data I've looked at, but I may be looking at the wrong data, but I guess it's irrelevant if you're saying that the law does not require a data point in reading in English. Then this first set of language, if you replace the word English learners with students, requires that the districts give an English data point locally. The state has no access to the data, and the only thing it does is give parents access to that data point if they want it. And that's really what we're discussing here. We're not asking, apparently, based on the intent of the law as understood, that there be a data point in English for every child who gets money through the READ Act. That's not happening anyway. The question is, will the districts be required to test in English for parents who want that information to show that the students are becoming literate in English and Spanish or whatever their native language is?
Dr. Flores.
And it's also, it's just logical that if you are in a bilingual program, you are going to be testing in two languages. And you must do that. I mean, how will you know whether they are progressing in reading? You won't know. And
yeah,
there won't be any data to know. And what I hear from a lot of the community, and this is Denver, lots of parents who are complaining, at least in some of our high schools, where we have second language learners who are not reading, who are not doing well in English. And so there is too much of that going on.
Sure.
Meaning I'm out in the community,
right,
and I hear it. And so they are very upset.
Mm-hmm.
I just went to a meeting last week.
Mm-hmm.
I heard it again. Parents are very concerned. And that's my area. That's what my doctorate was in. And I know that if you are in a bilingual program, you test in English and you test in Spanish. And it's the same thing. I mean, I know it's Denver, but there's programs in Texas, there's programs in Nevada, there's programs in other states. And if you look at the research, you may be talking about just Denver and your program, but the research for everybody in this country says that you have to test in two languages.
And thank you. And I do want to assure the State Board, we absolutely do collect information in both languages.
Collecting data and testing in English, you must do that.
And we absolutely do find out whether
they can read.
We absolutely do.
Especially in the third grade. By third grade, kids have to know how to read in English because they're gaining all this information in English. They're learning from reading. Mm-hmm. So it's very important that we know that they are gaining and succeeding in learning English in literacy. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Schroeder.
So help me out again, since I'm a novice at this. What do you learn from the access test, which I believe is given every year?
Yes.
So what do you learn? What don't you learn?
Sure. So the access test gives us multiple sets of information, both around oral language, but not only around oral language. It gives us information on reading, writing. That combines into a literacy score. On speaking and listening, that combines into a comprehension score. And so we actually have very robust information on our English learners, K-12 within our district, that we use to inform both what we're doing instructionally, alongside with the assessment data that we're collecting inside classrooms, through informal assessments, data points that we are sharing in both languages, both with our teachers and the families of our students.
And is the access data shared with parents?
Absolutely, yes.
So if parents are getting information K through 7th or 8th grade that their students, actually it shouldn't take, they shouldn't be in a ESL program or ELL program that long anyway. I mean, I'm trying to figure out the high school example you gave, which is very relevant. I've heard it before too, but they're very often kids that come in later. They're not kids that have gone all the way through the system, or are they kids that have been gone all the way through the system?
Yeah, and I want to be really transparent about the fact that Denver, like many urban districts, has an issue with long-term ELLs. We know that. We've looked at our data. Frankly, part
long-term
of what...
Long-term what, I'm sorry?
Long-term ELL. English ELL. Learners.
English learners.
Right. And part of what we have self-diagnosed is for many years, we had a program that pushed students into English very quickly, did not create a strong foundation, and resulted in students who get to higher grade levels not fully proficient in first language and certainly not proficient in English. That's something that we are really working on, is making sure that we've built what we call an access on track trajectory so that we can determine when are kids on track in their language development and when are they off track. We use that also to inform what we do in literacy instruction so that we can make the kind of adjustments, the interventions in reading, based on how on-track or off-track kids are with their language acquisition.
Ms. Goff and then Dr. Sheff.
Just very briefly, for the past few years anyway, it's been statewide. The growth of ELL learners on portions of our state assessments has been at a greater rate than other groups. So it's a statewide. It's not only Denver.
Mm-hmm.
Always glad to hear it. But it's a phenomenon that's happened in the state over several years. So looking a little deeper at the reason for that, the program makeup, what is everyone using, what seems to be working, why is it working? It's all part of the conversation we're having here today.
Absolutely.
So the importance of knowing, literacy is literacy, and it's easier to acquire it in a new second, third, fourth with some of these kids if you've got the foundation in your native language. So I appreciate that. I mean, just wanted to make sure everybody realizes this is a Colorado picture. It's not just a portion of the state.
No, and the research is clear. We all learn to read one time. We can learn multiple language and apply our knowledge of reading to those new languages as we acquire the language, the second language or the third.
Okay. Ms. Rangan, did you have a question? I've ignored you.
I just have a brief one. Do you give parents the opportunity to opt either for English or for Spanish when their students take a test, and what grade level is that?
Sure. So the way parents exercise their choice is through the selection initially of the program model. And so all parents have the right to determine for their English learners, do I want a supported English language program? Do I want a transitional native language program? Do I want a dual language program? Okay. Once they've selected into those programs, we communicate with parents about the progress of students. We've worked very closely, you know, as many of you realize, we are under a federal consent decree that governs lots of aspects of our instructional program. So we assess students based on their language of instruction, their classroom program type, and their access scores before we transition them into an English assessment. However, when parents come to us and talk about wanting a program change, parents always can opt for a different program model. So if they're in a classroom where instruction is primarily in Spanish, while kids are learning English and they'd like to transition them into a supported English classroom, we make those changes based on parent request.
I just wanted to ask a question about the statement.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We'll come
back. While you're on it,
go. Sure. You said 40% of your students are English language learners. Of those 40%, what percentage do parents opt into the English program or tract?
Yeah, so it's about half and half. For our earliest learners, it tends to be a little bit higher than 50%. Or as our students progress, it tends to be lower. So our upper grade students, it generally is more like in the low 40s to mid 40s.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Flores and then Dr. Schroeder.
I think a lot of the parents that I hear from say that they don't have, that they take that scale that asks them three questions, and then if parents say that they speak Spanish at home, usually you just put them in there. Parents often say that they want their kids to learn English from the very beginning, and the school, or it's just common knowledge that if Spanish is spoken in the home, you push them into a Spanish language program, even though parents want their kids to learn English. And that has just been true. It was very difficult, I know, when I was teaching with Denver Public Schools, to get a child or a parent who wanted their child to learn in English, to get that kid in English, when they said that they spoke Spanish at the home. And I think from the very beginning, parents need to have an option. Mm-hmm. And it should be given. I mean, it's given. Choice is your big mantra word. And if it's choice in language, parents definitely have the right to have their children in school instructed in the language that they choose.
Yeah.
And I think that you should do more, or else there wouldn't be all that discussion out in the in the public. The public is very angry about this, that their wishes are usually not heard and not taken into account.
Thank you for that feedback.
Dr. Schroeder. I'm working on it. Dr. Shovel.
All right.
Can you come up with a word that combines our names?
All right.
We'll just both jump. I wanted to drink before the next meeting.
I wanted to talk now to the CDE staff, so I don't know why Ms. Cordova had to stay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it. I just wanted to make a comment. You know, this is all about detail. There's a lot of detail here, and that's why there's a level of confusion. But when we look at the access test, if we were to bring the protocol in and look at it and look at the content of the assessment and the nature of the questions, those who would know a lot about literacy and how to predict whether or not a student will be on grade level by the end of third grade would not be satisfied with that as an assessment in English for parents who care about that data point. So to say that we're testing in access already and that works is really not accurate, and I think if we were to look at the protocol, it would become very obvious. The second issue is, what other districts besides Denver Public School have issues with districts providing an English data point to parents, though not reported to the state, and also Spanish, which is required already? What other districts had problems with this language?
We did not hear from any other districts.
So we have Denver Public, which has issues, but we haven't heard from any of the other districts. And I guess I just feel that for parents who want their students to speak in English, they need a data point tied to these funds, which is our only state initiative, K-3, in literacy, and it predicts their trajectory throughout the rest of their schooling. So that would be my thought on this language.
I think we're going to lay this over at this point and bring it back at the next meeting. Let's see, or if, would it be helpful if we took a vote now? We had at least one no vote, then it would tee it up for final action next time.
And are we voting on the first or the second paragraph?
We'll take a motion on, would somebody care to move the amendment to the rules? That would be the one of the above.
Yes. Joyce has another question.
It's not necessary to have to take a motion or take a vote.
Okay, so we can come back to this without.
But can we vote on the testing?
We're
on the issue of whether we should have testing in English. And testing in Spanish
next time.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's going to be the
and not on the language.
Yeah, that's going to be before us next time. Either this language or some language that we work on between now and then.
Okay.
And I think that if I understand, I think virtually everyone on the board, and if I understand the legislative intent, it is to provide data points for English performance so that everyone can determine, parents included, that adequate progress is being made toward proficiency in the economic language of the country. So that that seems to be the objective, and I just think we need to reach that in the most simple way, so that because this can be confusing in a way that we can all understand that we've in fact reached that, and we've reached that with the minimal amount of intrusion required to reach it. So it would seem to me that I don't quite understand why a district would object to testing in English. I'm sure there's probably reasons that I don't understand. But we're going to take this off the table for now. We're going to work on this, come back with perhaps a third option that we might deal with on the English testing. So,
can I ask one more question?
Yes, one more question.
So one more question is, why is this in 3.04, in Section 3 rather than 4? This would confuse me because I'm assuming that we're using Spanish by choice to determine a significant reading deficiency. Then if we want a follow-up, that will be Section 4. And so I'm still struggling with where this particular issue of additional testing should be. And I guess I would say that the opinion from Attorney General Southers did specify that this was not about English. He actually makes a point in his opinion to say the whole READ Act is nothing about English, that it's about being able to read. That's just his opinion. It may not be ours, but that is what is in that opinion.
If I could just tell you why it's in 3.04,
yep, that'd be good.
We could consider 4.0. I would just want to answer your question, uh-huh, and then let you have that for your feedback between now and next meeting. It's in 3.04 because it is that particular section that speaks to the requirements around assessment. Section 4.0 speaks to what happens after a deficiency is determined. It is possible that you would have a student who might not be deficient in one of their languages of instruction but would be deficient in another language of instruction. And that, I think, is why it was initially built into 3.04, is it's about the testing aspect and not the services aspect.
But isn't that the issue we're worrying about, the fact that if you give a kid a test in a language they don't speak, I assure you, I have a severe reading deficiency in a bunch of languages. And so I thought that's what we're trying to do, is to identify severe reading deficiency in the language that student knows, and then move forward, as opposed to diagnosing in a language they don't know. Something's not making sense to me.
There are two languages. There are two languages. You could have a deficiency in the second language.
Well, of course you would, if you're still learning it.
If not, and not one in the other one. And you have to measure sequentially, you know, in a sequence, whether how they're coming along.
I don't disagree with that.
Okay.
But to diagnose a severe reading disability is different to me
than progress.
And you know,
progress.
A teacher who knows reading and a reading person who is a technical person and knows this area would know that it's the language or just that it's language. I mean, it's, but the two languages are very, Spanish and English are different. I know that they have the same letter sounds and such, but English has its own issues. And we have a lot of kids in this country who speak English who have a lot of more problems because of the language in English. In Spanish, it's very easy. It's the sound and the letter match. English is not the same. There are exceptions, and so that's why maybe we should change English so that it's like Spanish.
This isn't helpful. I've had to learn English, so I get that. That's not relevant to what we're...
It is very relevant. English. Maybe it is.
It's
a difficult language.
I think the rub is...
It's a different language.
I think we know where we'd like to get. Let's see if we can get there.
We can. Can I ask? I'm sure we can.
And we'll take... yes. One last question.
Can I ask Ms. Birdsall to clarify whether or not putting this off another month, what does that do to our timeline?
So I don't think it impedes on it at all because the way the rules are, the board either can vote at the time of the hearing only if it's unanimous. If not, then the norm is to put the rules as an action item on the following month.
So we're not on the clock yet with these, but we will need to take action next month, so let's all become prepared to take action. So, okay, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
And can you present the information to us in kindergarten?
Very long, but it's an important issue.
We will. We'd be happy to answer any questions in the interim.
All right. Let's try and get to the next item, which would be the honoring the Colorado Outstanding Distinguished School. And we'll take a five-minute break while they're bringing those folks in. I apologize once again for being behind schedule. All right. The next item on the agenda is the recognition of the 2015 Title I Distinguished Schools. Commissioner Crandall, if you'd please take charge.
Hold on just one second, Mr. Crandall. He was very excited about this.
Okay.
There you are. Thank you. I'm like, I'm not going to take charge until. It's funny. This is the highlight of the first couple of days, is celebrating success in Colorado education. And so we're pleased to honor the two recipients of the 2015 Title I Distinguished Schools. And this is falls under the purview of Alyssa Pearson, who runs this area, and she has the people with her here today. But these are two of our best schools that we're going to be recognizing. I appreciate you making the trip to be here. So Alyssa, please.
Thanks. Today we will honor our 2015 Title I Distinguished School Award winners. Since 2006, Colorado, in conjunction with the National Title I Association, has selected examples of superior Title I school programs for recognition through the National Title I Distinguished Schools Program. Schools are selected in one of two categories, exceptional student performance for two or more consecutive years, or closing achievement gaps between student groups. In order to be eligible, schools must meet the following criteria: a poverty rate of at least 35%, demonstrated high academic achievement for two or more consecutive years, and meet or exceed state criteria for at least two consecutive years. From among the more than 670 Title I schools in the state of Colorado, the 2015 Title I Distinguished School Award for Closing the Achievement Gap was presented to Palmer Lake Elementary School and in Lewis Palmer School District. Students at Palmer Lake Elementary increased their performance in both reading and math, going from 80% to 82% proficient and advanced in reading and 74% to 82% in math. The most noteworthy increase in performance occurred in their disaggregated groups, resulting in reduction of achievement gaps for all student subgroups in both reading and math from 2013 to 2014. Achievement gaps in reading for English learners and minority students decreased by approximately 20% and more than 4% in math, even while the math performance of non-English learners and non-minority students increased at the same time. English learners increased from 58% proficient in advanced to 81% proficient or advanced in reading, and 56% to 67% in math. Minority students' performance increased from 68% proficient in advanced to 86% in reading, and from 58% to 69% in math.
Mr. Chair, just to clarify, in a single year?
Mm-hmm.
And
then for the other school, for the second year in a row, Benjamin Eaton Elementary School from the Eaton School District has won the 2015 Title I Distinguished School Award for Exceptional Student Performance. Students have performed above 78% of all Colorado elementary schools in math and above 69% in reading for the last 3 years. Their overall performance has placed them above 93% of all Title I elementary schools for both reading and math. In 2014, 81% of students scored proficient or advanced in reading, and 84% scored proficient or advanced in math. Also in 2014, 70% of students who were eligible for free or reduced meals scored proficient or advanced in reading, and 72% in math, which is well above our state average. So these schools have a lot to teach us that we can learn about for the rest of the state. These Colorado schools join hundreds of other distinguished schools nationwide, making a difference for our Title I children. At an award ceremony at each school in December, Interim Commissioner Dr. Elliot Asp presented each school with their award, including a banner commemorating their incredible achievement and a check for $10,000 for the school's discretion. I'd like to introduce both of the Title I Distinguished Schools now and ask that their principals say a few words. So first, from Palmer Lake Elementary School, we have Peggy Griebenow.
Thank you, Chairman Durham and members of the board. We are thrilled and honored to receive the Title I Distinguished School Award. I would also like to recognize Karen Broft, our superintendent of schools, who is here also this morning. When I found out that I would have a few minutes to say a few words this morning, I hoped that I would come up with something that would adequately convey what it means to our staff to be recognized for this award. Several weeks ago, I had the privilege to attend the National Title I Conference in Houston, Texas. Thank you, CDE, for your generous $10,000 award that allowed us to go to the conference. It was a wonderful opportunity for two of my staff members and me to attend a variety of sessions that were specifically tailored to educators who work with populations of impacted students. I had several takeaways from my time there that are applicable to this time to recognize excellence. LeVar Burton, from Reading Rainbow, Roots, Star Trek, was a keynote speaker. And he shared his passion for reading and his desire to create lifelong learners. He spoke of closing the hope gap more than he spoke of closing the achievement gap or the growth gap. While we're here today to recognize Palmer Lake and Benjamin Eaton for closing the latter two gaps, it is also important to note that as we close the achievement and growth gaps, we also close the hope gap for our most struggling students. Closing the hope gap for Palmer Lake students means that our staff helps our students feel empowered to shape their own future by teaching them to manage conflict, solve problems, communicate more effectively, and oh yes, to read, write, and be mathematical thinkers. We are a team that puts our students first and sets aside anything that would hinder that priority. Giving our kids confidence in themselves as readers and mathematicians bequeaths to them the power over their future as they go into the 21st century. They can choose to do anything, go anywhere, be anyone they want to be. American author Alex Haley said, "Find the good and praise it." Thank you for finding the good in our efforts as we work with our children who come to our school each day with many deficits that put them at a disadvantage for a productive future. Our greatest reward comes from knowing that we work each day to equip a new generation with literacy and math skills that puts the world literally at their fingertips. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, Kenny Gartrell, the principal from Benjamin Eaton, will you share a few words?
Thank you. Chairman Durham and members of the board, thank you for allowing me to come up here and speak today. Being that this is our second go-around through this award, we got a chance to reflect, which doesn't always happen in this situation. Have to think back to when I got the chance to tell when Peggy and the folks at CDE called us, and I called a meeting, and they think it's a negative thing when you call a meeting as a principal in the afternoon. You don't tell them what it's about. And had a lot of shocked faces when I said, you've won the award for a second consecutive year, because it is you. It is a team effort. They're doing it. And after not a lot of response, I had a chance to question along the way, and they were in shock because winning it last year, it was more of we won the contest. Yay, won, we're good. Second time, they were really deep in thought that it was a validation of the efforts that they've been putting forth, no matter what the award was or what the achievement gap or the achievement we attained as a school. So it was a really great moment for us to come together as a staff and realize, you know what, this does really confirm. It wasn't just a one-shot thing. We are doing the right things, and it's showing, and the kids are benefiting from it. As a staff, we also got a chance to reflect and say, okay, now why is it? Is there the great curriculum? Is there great materials? Is the staff that's great? And yes, all of those things are there, but we came up with four things that we thought that are a little more on the outside that benefit us and get us to go in the right direction. One of those is just high expectations. The simplest thing of no matter where you're at in the realm of your academic or social or behavioral elements as a student walking into our building, we're going to take that and we're going to set a bar for you, and you're going to achieve that, and you're going to work on those things, and everybody's going to be held to that accountability. And I think that works really well. And it's a challenge for kids to move into the district that have not been here for a while. But we have that high expectation of everybody. The staff puts that on themselves, and I think that that pays off. We have a common worth ethic through the school. And in fact, when we did have our assembly, I brought back some members of our state volleyball team, which athletically they've won three in a row at the state level, Class 3A. But they came back not to reflect on that, to say, you know what, we learned what it was like to work hard back in that 3-5 building, Benjamin Eaton. And those lessons of, yeah, we have homework, we have this expectation put on us, and those things led them to develop those habits, to build on. And all of them, if I would ask them, grade point averages are 4 point or above, and yet they're succeeding on and off the athletic fields as well. So they're good students. So setting that tone with the work ethic is a great thing. We don't forget about the whole student approach. They are kids. In my building, they're 3-5. And we make sure that we take care of them socially, emotionally as well, and make it an environment that they want to come to, that they want to be a part of. Even if that means I have to dress up as Darth Vader to promote the book fair, or go out. Yeah, thank you. coming up in the future, I think I'm getting pied in the face because we're trying to raise some money for the parent group. So putting myself out there, but making it a great, fun environment for them. And that leads into the one thing that we didn't have the year before, and that was necessarily, we had a great school, we won the award, but we didn't necessarily have a positive or welcoming environment. And this being my first year and being in the district, I saw some of these things, and that has been the main focus we've had, is to get the parents, get those stakeholders back into our building, make it that welcoming environment for them. And again, I'll share another fact that we had a literacy night, probably the best attended we've ever had. And a chili supper that serves 120 served 250. And so we're getting the people in there, and we're making the environment that the parents are welcome to come to as well. And the final thing is the professionalism. We hear people say that act professional, be professional, and we don't need to worry about that. The staff at my building is professionals. They come in early, they stay late. We don't have to worry about them. They're in on the weekends as well. They do everything they can to help these kids. And that goes above to the district office people, our school board. They treat us as such and allow us to have these great successes. So thank you for the grant and the opportunity to be able to do some things for the school. We're already working on helping to get that gap of a one-to-one with computers in our building. This helps bridge that. We're working to make that STEM push that sometimes you just can't reach to get. And weather station on the building, different things. We're having a summer camp this summer with that kind of a focus. So we're always looking for different things, and having that set of amount of funds is helping us to maybe do some things that we thought were in the future, but they're here now for us, okay? So thank you again for allowing me to come here to speak. I invite you to come to their school or our school to see at any moment. Just come on down. We're very welcoming, and we'll let you see what we do and how we do it, awards or not. So thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. I want to commend the award winners for their dedication to student achievement and to raising expectations. We appreciate what you've done, and we'd appreciate it if you'd join us for a picture with the commissioner. And we'll start with Palmer Lake Elementary.
Good still the road for me, though.
Yeah, you're closer to my residence.
I'm probably closer.
Next, we have Benjamin Eaton Elementary.
All right, if I can just have you guys take a step this way so we can see it. Yep.
Okay, the board will come back to order. We're now going to proceed into executive session. Let's see.
We've got a 2.5-hour presentation.
Oh, we got the commissioners. let's come back to that and let's do executive session at this point in time.
Go ahead to executive session.
Yeah, do you want to read the appropriate language, Ms. Winston?
I'd be happy
we'll
to.
Get to you. Don't worry.
Aren't we
going to
get lunch?
We are. That's the whole point. Yes. Okay.
An executive session has been noticed for today's state board meeting in conformance with 24-6-4023 ACRS to receive legal advice on specific legal questions pursuant to 24-6-4023A Roman numeral 2 CRS in matters required to be kept confidential by federal law, rules, or state statutes pursuant to 24-6-4023A Roman numeral 3 CRS.
Oh, okay. All right. Is there a motion for executive session? Is there a second?
Second.
That requires a two-thirds vote. Is there any objection to the adoption of that motion? Seeing none, that motion's adopted, and those that are not eligible to be here for privileged information, we're going to try hard to reconvene at 1 o'clock. We'll start with the commissioner's report, I think.